The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
All different teachers. And some of the confusion has to do with the distinction between mindfulness as a particular faculty of mind versus mindfulness as a practice. So, for example, most of us, you know, who have legs that can run, and so you could run, or you can have a running practice. If you run, that's one thing, but when you say running practice, that implies that it's like training, right? It means that you run regularly, you maybe push yourself a little bit more than you normally would, you know, you stretch first, you stretch when you're finished. You do a variety of things that go with training. Training implies something more than just running. If I just said that I run, you wouldn't know whether I was running for exercise, running after the bus, running after a woman. You know, you wouldn't know. You know, there's all kinds of things to run after. And I'm being chased, and that's why I'm running. Just running, right? So a little bit in the same way, there's a distinction being made between mindfulness and mindfulness training or mindfulness practice. And as a factor of awakening, it usually in the definitions of it, it refers to the practice of mindfulness as opposed to just the faculty. But sometimes it refers to the faculty. So the faculty is a very simple faculty, apparently, the way it's described, which is that faculty that just able to hold something in awareness, like I said, talked about in the morning. The most common definitions in the tradition is the definition of mind not floating away from what it's choosing to pay attention to. So it's not forgetting to pay attention. Mindfulness practice then involves a variety of other things, and different teachers will emphasize different things that go together with that practice. One common one is a lot of people want to combine mindfulness with a strong sense of equanimity. And so there's discussion about non-reactive awareness, and when that equanimity is brought to bear on it as well. There's also the idea of, in the suttas, of ardency and clear comprehension. Clear comprehension is sampajana. Clear comprehension is that part of mindfulness practice that you clearly comprehend what it is you're holding, what's going on. So if you can be aware of yourself breathing, you can hold your attention with the breath and not wander away from the breath. And so you always remember to stay with your breath, stay close to the breath. But then the clear comprehension starts seeing clearly the nature of that breath. So some people emphasize that part of mindfulness, and mindfulness has to do a lot with recognition and seeing what's there. Mindfulness by itself as a faculty is not so much like that. It's more like when you mix it with mindfulness practice that you get these other qualities mixed in. So there's some ambiguity about when people talk about mindfulness, what exactly it is, because people slide between talking about it as a particular faculty versus talking about it as a practice. As soon as you talk about a practice, other things are part of it as well. Does that make sense? I wanted to say that because what I'd like to do now is to do a meditation, kind of a guided meditation. And I would like to, during the course of the meditation, offer you four similes for mindfulness that are given in the ancient suttas. And so kind of metaphors for understanding what it might be. And these, even though they're used for mindfulness, they could also be understood that in different contexts, mindfulness looks a little different, depending on what's going on. So for example, if your mind is easily distracted and wanders off into the hindrances a lot, then perhaps mindfulness has to stay really energetic and engaged to really stay present enough to prevent the mind from wandering off too easily. If the hindrances and distractions are not strong, but they're not present at all, then it's easy to stay present. And then mindfulness can be much more relaxed, and the image of it is the image of these two contrasting ways is like a goat herder who during the growing season of the crops has to watch the goats really carefully, make sure they don't wander off and eat in the fields and eat the farmer's grains. And so they have to be right there with the stick poking, and don't go that way, don't go this way, you know, stay on track. But when the grain has been harvested and there's nothing growing anymore, then the goat herder can just lean against a tree in the shade and just kind of just be very relaxed and spacious and open. Just know where the goats are. Just kind of keep it, you know, but doesn't have to be so concerned riding it so close. So sometimes mindfulness, because of our inner condition, mindfulness needs to be much more engaged and active. And sometimes it can be very relaxed and spacious and just allow things to come and go and all that. So each of these similes kind of point to different aspects of mindfulness and relevant in different circumstances. I'd like to offer you the similes, and perhaps the images in the simile, perhaps the sense of them, the understanding of them, can evoke something for you or touch something for you or point to some aspect of mindfulness for you that is be useful. Is that a plan? Okay. So, that four, I'll offer four. So, take an alert and comfortable posture. Especially since it's right after lunch, you might want to emphasize the alert part. Letting your spine be a little bit more alert than maybe it normally would be. And then take a couple of two or three long, slow, deep breaths. And as you exhale, enter your body gently. Gentling your body. And then letting your breath return to normal. And then take a few moments to scan through your body to see if there's any obvious places of holding that you can soften. Perhaps you can soften your belly. Perhaps you can release a little bit of tension in your legs. Perhaps a wave of softening through your arms and hands. And perhaps a gentling of your chest, rib cage. And perhaps you can soften the muscles of your face. Eyes, forehead, jaw. And then see if you can have a global awareness of your body in whatever easy way that comes to you. And then within your body, as part of your body, become aware of how the body experiences breathing. And then we'll continue for a little bit here, just a couple of minutes silently, centering yourself on the breathing, being mindful of breath. As I say these similes, if you can, use the breath as the primary place of mindfulness. But if something else is more compelling, it's fine to use that. The first simile is that of a surgeon who, with his or her hands, probes in the area where there's going to be a cut. Feels, senses, uses her hands to really, really kind of probe and find out what's there. So in that way, mindfulness can have a capacity of probing, not just of holding what's there, but really being so close that it actually kind of touches and feels and explores the experience. That kind of intimacy of a hand exploring or feeling into the body through the skin. So what's it like for your awareness to to go into your breathing and feel the texture of it, the various qualities of it, sensations of it. Almost feeling like feeling the breathing inside the breathing. Perhaps taking a deep breath and letting go of the idea of a probing surgeon. The second simile that the Buddha used was that of a gatekeeper. In the ancient world, the cities might have been surrounded by a wall, and there might be one gate into the city and out of the city. And the gatekeeper sits at the gate and is aware of everyone who comes and goes, and is aware of who should be allowed in and who should not, would receive the messages that come and deliver them to the city. So mindfulness sits at the juncture between what is happening and how we relate to what's happening. The experience of the world always comes to us through the gate of awareness. And then once it's through that gate, we think about it, react to it, respond to it. Thus, our inner city. So mindfulness sits there at that juncture and is aware of what comes, the sounds, the smells, the taste, the touch, the thoughts, and chooses what to pick up, what to leave alone. Thought arises, leave that alone. Doesn't have to come in. And it's aware of what leaves the city, aware of the reactions we have that leave our city to react and do something with what's going on in the world. Mindfulness puts us in the place of choice. So we can choose whether to act, react or not. So what's it like for you to have mindfulness situated at that juncture of the present moment between what's happening and how we relate to what's happening. There is a breathing, and then there's a way we react and relate to the breathing. Sitting at the place of choice, perhaps you can become aware of the ways that you relate that are not needed, don't have to let it continue, and those which are useful. And taking a deep breath, letting go of that simile. And the next one the Buddha used was kind of like the one that mentioned this morning of the eagle, bird's eye view. In the case of the Buddha, he used the idea of someone standing high up in a tower. The tower looking down at all the people and activities below. So having this broad, expansive overview of what goes on. At the same time, not entangled with it, not caught up in the drama of what's happening below, just seeing it, noticing it. Expansively, spaciously, relaxedly, from a high vantage point. Staying aware of what happens here. And then taking a deep breath and letting go of that image. Then the final simile is that of the goat herder who sits underneath the tree, relaxing up against the, leaning against the trunk of the tree in the shade, with a wide open expanse, fields in front of her. Keeping an eye on it all, seeing it all, but quite relaxed about it. It's enough just to know it. It's enough just to be aware. Nothing has to be done about anything. Staying at ease in your mind, in your heart, but connected and aware of what's happening with your breath elsewhere. Now, of these four approaches to mindfulness, which comes to you most easily, or which one is most compelling for you? The kind of mindfulness that probes the experience, that which is a gatekeeper, tracking what comes and goes, what choices we make in staying present or not, or that of standing high up in a tower, great overview of situation. Or the relaxed goat herder with a panoramic view of the fields and the goats. If it's possible to put on different lenses on awareness, are you more comfortable with a close-up lens of your experience or a wide angle lens that takes in a wide range of what's happening here. And how easy is it for you to switch between having your awareness be really close in, probing, close-up lens? How easy is it for you to switch from the close-up to the wide angle, from the bird's eye view? Can you switch back and forth easily? So one of the reasons I wanted to do this exercise was to convey to you the idea that there's not just one way of doing mindfulness, that mindfulness is not just one thing, one kind of lens, one kind of approach to being with our experience, but that a mindfulness practitioner hopefully is able to switch and move between different lenses, different ways of being present at different times. There are some times where what's needed is a very very precise focus. Other times what's needed is a very step back and very spacious, broad awareness of what's happening. And some people I know get stuck on one or the other. And they think that it's only about, you know, this deep probing, you know, and you know, detailed analysis of what's going on. And other people feel it's only this kind of broad, big mind, spacious awareness, kind of let things kind of float through the big, open space of the mind. That's the only thing you're supposed to do. But actually, different circumstances is different ways of being, different kind of way of using mindfulness and what's required. So I'm curious to hear from some of you what that was like to do that. I'm not that interested about how it didn't work. Not to disrespect that. I mean, I certainly appreciate that any kind of guided meditation I do is not going to work for everyone. But I think in this circumstance, we'd actually learn more from you know, what worked, what was interesting or helpful in this, for doing this. Anybody would like to? Yes, Victor.
I thought it was a lot of fun. it was great. I've never called out those things in the past so specifically, but I noticed that those are types that I go through, especially in retreat. I can see very distinctly, and it usually the probing, precise, whatever, is sort of at the beginning of a sit, and towards the end it's the relaxed, calm, spacious, but attentive. So it's nice to have a framework around that.
Great. Thank you.
I was kind of relieved that we weren't supposed to pick one over the other. So, because usually I thought, oh, my goats are all over the place.
Yeah. Eating the crops.
Eating the crops. So I'm running, you know. But then I found after this morning, I have calmed down so much during this morning that I was finding myself leaning against the tree, and it was, you know, spacious and attentive, as Victor said. And I thought it depends on where you are, with which one is appropriate. And that was good to know.
Great, thank you.
My goats were kind of big today. They might have been elephants. So the gatekeeper was very useful, whereas taking a more spacious view, they really took off into the distance quickly. So it was nice to see the contrast.
Great. So being a gatekeeper allowed you to do what?
Oh, a lot more mindful, a lot more to stay more present with gatekeeper, whereas taking a more relaxed view, I felt more jumbled up inside.
Great. Thank you.
This is the first time I had tried the goat idea on explicitly, and I find that very kind and fitting. So I saw once in some property in Carmel Valley these little pygmy goats cruise the neighborhood, and they were sort of like going and running to people's yards and going, you know, they were like bad goats, you know. And I really feel like that's what goes on with me sometimes. It's like there is this goat over there that is like doing this thing. It's like maybe it's anxious, maybe it's afraid, maybe it's angry. But it's a goat out doing its cruising around and stuff. And the shepherd thing was helpful so that I didn't feel quite as controlling of the whole thing, that it was more like, there's those goats again. So that was very helpful.
Great. And hopefully all the crops are in.
I found myself most relaxed when I actually combined the two of them so that I was up in a tower, but I was looking down, and I was also the goat herd sitting against the tree. And from the tower, I just felt very expansive, and I was trusting that awareness was taking place in a way that I hadn't experienced before. I think maybe before there was this kind of urgency about whether I was paying enough attention. And this is the feeling, yeah, attention is being paid, and I can rest in that.
Thank you. Over here.
I think the first one worked best for me. I was able to imagine like the surgeon's hand probing a flesh of another, and I could do that with awareness, and I could get the feel of like probing with awareness and taking an interest in the breathing, because my mind was kind of drifting off. But later I couldn't really connect with the later similes, and I dozed off. So.
Great.
Yeah.
Thank you. That's what I expected, that some of the similes would you'd connect with and some you wouldn't. And also it depends a little bit on the state of the mind. So if the mind is drifting a lot, sometimes something the probing keeps you engaged much more. And the last thing you want to do if your mind is drifting is kind of be the goat herder up against a tree, you know, you just fall asleep. It's all the way in the back, if you could pass.
I became quite intrigued with the gatekeeper, and I was the gatekeeper to my thoughts, and I envisioned this ancient wise woman with a clipboard in her hand, very gently and kindly talking to each thought petitioner to come through the gate, and saying, very kindly, very gently, well, you know, I really don't think you're that useful right now. You know, come back another time. And then also, well, okay, this is worth evaluating or looking at. Come on in. And so.
Thank you. Great. So that's enough. I appreciate that a lot, to get a wide range of reactions and to that. So hopefully that's interesting for you, useful for you to get a sense that there's a wide range. The one that's most mentioned in the kind of American Vipassana movement is the thing about the lenses. That sometimes you want to have a close-up lens, sometimes a wide-angled lens. And so to have senses, two different options, and everything in between, I suppose. Sometimes it's helpful to get really close, zero in, and sometimes that just makes it more tense, or like if it's pain or something, it just makes us more difficult. But if you take this wide-angle lens, then it can be much more room around the experience, much less reactivity, much less need to do anything about it, and much easier. So be able to go back and forth, have a sense of these different lenses is helpful. So what all these forms of mindfulness have in common is they're all holding something about the present moment in mind. So remembering to stay present. We're not floating away, drifting away into the past and the future into thoughts, but we're holding the present, we're holding some aspect of the present in our mind's awareness. Just how we're doing it can shift and change depending on how mindfulness practice is being done, what's needed at particular times. Seem good? So we have a very good foundation, I think, for what we're going to do next.